Saying that democracy abhors undue secrecy, a federal court struck down on September 28, 2004, an entire Patriot Act provision that gives the government unchecked authority to issue national security letters, to obtain sensitive customer records from internet service providers and other businesses without judicial oversight.
In the case of Doe and ACLU v. Ashcroft et al., the court also found a broad gag provision in the law to be an unconstitutional prior restraint on free speech.
Talking about said ruling, ACLU Executive Director Anthony D. Romero stated that this is a landmark victory against the Justice Department's misguided attempt to intrude into the lives of innocent Americans in the name of national security.
Even now, some in Congress are trying to pass additional intrusive law enforcement powers. This decision should put a halt to those efforts, said Anthony Romero.
In an extraordinary sealed case, the American Civil Liberties Union has challenged the FBI's unchecked authority to issue national security letters, NSLs, which demand sensitive customer records from internet service providers and other businesses without judicial oversight.
Before the Patriot Act, the FBI could use the National Security Letters authority only against suspected terrorists and spies. Thanks to Section 505 of the Patriot Act, the FBI can now use National Security Letters to obtain information about anyone at all.
The ACLU's legal papers argue that the National Security Letter statute violates the First and Fourth Amendments, because it does not impose adequate safeguards on the FBI's authority to force disclosure of sensitive and constitutionally protected information.
This association filed the lawsuit under seal to avoid penalties for violating the National Security Letter Statute's broad gag provision. Similar gag provisions are attached to other controversial provisions of the Patriot Act, including Section 215, which the ACLU has challenged in another lawsuit.
While the challenge to the National Security Letter provision was filed on April 6th, it took nearly 3 weeks for the ACLU to reach an agreement with the government that allowed the disclosure of anything at all about the case. The following excerpts from the decision of Judge Victor Marrero of the Southern District of New York are useful to understand this case and what is at stake here.
Plaintiffs in this case challenged the constitutionality of 18 U.S.C. Section 2709. That statute authorized the Federal Bureau of Investigations to compel communications firms, such as internet service providers, ISPs, or telephone companies, to produce certain customer records whenever the FBI certifies that those records are relevant to an authorized investigation to protect against international terrorism or clandestine intelligence activities.
The FBI demands under Section 2709 are issued in the form of a National Security Letter, NSL, which constitute a unique form of administrative subpoena cloaked in secrecy and pertaining to national security issues. The statute bars all national security letter recipients from ever disclosing that the FBI has issued a national security letter.
The lead plaintiff, called John Doe, for purposes of this litigation, is described in the complaint as an internet access firm that received an NSL. The other plaintiffs are the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, and the American Civil Liberties Foundation, which is also acting as counsel to Doe.
Plaintiffs contend that Section 2709, broad subpoena power, violates the First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendments of the United States Constitution, and that the non-disclosure provision violates the First Amendment.
They argue that Section 2709 is unconstitutional on its face and as applied to the facts of this case. Plaintiffs' main complaints are that first, Section 2709 gives FBI extraordinary and unchecked power to obtain private information without any form of judicial process. And second, that Section 2709 non-disclosure provision burdens speech categorically and perpetually without any case-by-case judicial consideration of whether that speech burden is justified.
For the reasons explained below, the court grants plaintiff's motion. The court concludes that Section 2709 violates the Fourth Amendment because, at least as currently applied, it effectively bars or substantially deters any judicial challenge to the propriety of a national security letter request.
In the court's view, ready availability of judicial process to pursue such a challenge is necessary to vindicate important rights guaranteed by the Constitution or by statute.
On separate grounds, the court also concludes that the permanent ban on disclosure contained in Section 2709C, which the court is unable to sever from the remainder of the statute, operates as an unconstitutional prior restraint on speech under the First Amendment.
In simplest terms, Section 2709C fails to pass muster under the exacting First Amendment standards applicable here because it is so broad and open-ended.
In its all-inclusive sweep, it prohibits the NSL recipient or its officers, employees, or agents from revealing the existence of an NSL inquiry the FBI pursued under Section 2709 in every case to any person in perpetuity, with no vehicle for the ban to ever be lifted from the recipient or other persons affected, under any circumstances, either by the FBI itself or pursuant to judicial process.
The most recent major revision to Section 2709 occurred in October 2001 as part of the USA Patriot Act of 2001. In short, the Patriot Act removes the previous requirement that Section 2709 inquiries have a nexus to a foreign power, replacing that prerequisite with a broad standard of relevance to investigations of terrorism or clandestine intelligence activities.
The Fourth Amendment prohibits the government from conducting unreasonable searches and seizures, which generally means that any search or seizure must be performed pursuant to a valid warrant based upon probable cause.
The Fourth Amendment's protection against unreasonable searches applies to administrative subpoenas, even though issuing a subpoena does not involve a literal physical intrusion or search.
In so doing, the Supreme Court explained that the Fourth Amendment is not confined literally to searches and seizures as such, but extends as well to the orderly taking under compulsion of process.
However, because administrative subpoenas are at best constructive searches, there is no requirement that they be issued pursuant to a warrant or that they be supported by probable cause.
Instead, an administrative subpoena needs only to be reasonable, which the Supreme Court has interpreted to mean that 1. The administrative subpoena is within the authority of the agency, 2. That the demand is not too indefinite, and 3. That the information sought is reasonably relevant to a proper inquiry.
An administrative subpoena is regulated by, and its justification derives from, judicial process, available after the subpoena is issued.
Accordingly, the Supreme Court has held that an administrative subpoena may not be made and enforced by the administrative agency. Rather, the subpoenaed party must be able to obtain judicial review of the reasonableness of the demand prior to suffering penalties for refusing to comply.
In sum, long-standing Supreme Court doctrine makes clear that an administrative subpoena statute is consistent with the Fourth Amendment when it is subject to judicial supervision and surrounded by every safeguard of judicial restraint.
Accordingly, the Court concluded that Section 2709 as applied here must be invalidated because in all but the exceptional case, it has the effect of authorizing coercive searches effectively immune from any judicial process in violation of the Fourth Amendment.
The Court also concludes that Section 2709 may, in a given case, violate a communication service subscriber's First Amendment privacy rights, as well as other legal rights, if judicial review is not readily available to an internet service provider that receives a national security letter.
For example, the FBI theoretically could issue into a political campaign's computer systems operator a Section 2709 national security letter compelling production of the names of all persons who have email addresses to the campaign's computer systems.
The FBI theoretically could also issue an NSL under Section 2709 to discern the identity of someone whose anonymous online weblog, or blog, is critical to the government.
Such inquiries might be beyond the permissible scope of the FBI's power under Section 2709, because the targeted information might not be relevant to an authorized investigation to protect against international terrorism or clandestine intelligence activities, or because the inquiry might be conducted solely on the basis of activities protected by the First Amendment.
These prospects only highlight the potential danger of the FBI's self-certification process and the absence of judicial oversight.
Other rights may also be violated by the disclosure contemplated by the statute. The statute's reference to transactional records creates ambiguity regarding the scope of the information required to be produced by the NSL recipient.
If the recipient interprets the NSL broadly as requiring involving the government installing a pen register or obtaining bank records, when a person voluntarily conveys information to third parties, he assumes the risk that the information will be turned over to the government.
The court rejects the government's reasoning. Every court that has addressed the issue has held that individual internet subscribers have a right to engage in anonymous internet speech, though anonymity may be trumped in a given case by other concerns. No court has adopted the government's argument here that anonymous internet speech or associational activity ceases to be protected because a third-party ISP is in possession of the identifying information.
Moreover, the court notes that the implication of the government's position are profound. Anonymous internet speakers could be unmasked merely by an administrative, civil or trial subpoena, or by any state or local disclosure regulation directed at their ISP, and the government would not have to provide any heightened justification for revealing the speaker.
The same would be true for attempts to compile membership lists by seeking the computerized records of an organization which uses a third-party electronic communications provider. Considering, as is undisputed here, the importance of the internet as a forum for speech and association, the court rejects the invitation to permit the rights of internet anonymity and association to be placed at such grave risk.
The court reaches this conclusion by determining that NSLs issued pursuant to Section 2709 may seek information about or indirectly obtained from subscribers that may be protected from disclosure by the First Amendment or other rights protecting constitutional provisions or statutes.
In deciding this case, the court must take account of the unique features of internet communication that may warrant application of different rules. The court is persuaded that, for First Amendment purposes, internet records of the type obtained via Section 2709, NSL could be different substantially from transactional bank or phone records.
The evidence on the record now before this court demonstrates that the information available through a Section 2709 NSL served upon an internet service provider could easily be used to disclose vast amounts of anonymous speech and associational activity.
For instance, Section 2709 imposes a duty to provide electronic communication transactional records, a phrase which, though undefined in the statute, certainly encompasses a log of email addresses with whom a subscriber has corresponded and the web pages that a subscriber visits.
Those transactional records can reveal, among other things, the anonymous message boards to which a person logs on or posts, the electronic newsletters to which he subscribes, and the advocacy websites he visits.
Moreover, Section 2709 imposes a duty on ISPs to provide the names and addresses of subscribers, thus enabling the government to specifically identify someone who has written anonymously on the internet.
As discussed above, given that an NSL recipient is directed by the FBI to turn over all information which you consider to be an electronic communication transactional record, the 2709 Section NSL could also reasonably be interpreted by an internet service provider to require, at minimum, disclosure of all email header information, including subject lines.
In stark contrast to this potential to compile elaborate dossiers on internet users, the information obtainable by a pen register is far more limited.
The court doubts that the result in Smith would have been the same if a pen register operated as a key to the most intimate person who signs onto an anonymous forum under a pseudonym, for example, is essentially shutting the door behind him and is surely entitled to a reasonable expectation that his speech, whatever form the expression assumes, will not be accessible to the government to be broadcast to the world absent appropriate legal processes.
To hold otherwise would ignore the rule of the internet as a remarkably powerful forum for private communication and association. Even the government concedes here that the internet is an important vehicle for the free exchange of ideas and facilitates associations.
To be sure, the court is keenly mindful of government reminders that the internet may also serve as a vehicle for crime. The court equally recognizes that circumstances exist in which the First Amendment rights of association and anonymity must yield to a more compelling government interest in obtaining records from internet firms.
To this end, the court re-emphasizes that it does not here purport to set forth the scope of these First Amendment rights in general, or define them in this or any other case.
The court holds only that such fundamental rights are certainly implicated in some cases in which the government may employ Section 2709 broadly to gather information, thus requiring that the process incorporate the safeguards of some judicial review to ensure that, if an infringement of those rights is asserted, they are adequately protected through fair process in an independent, neutral tribunal.
Because the necessary procedural protections are wholly absent here, the court finds on this ground additional cause for invalidating Section 2709 as applied.
Finally, the court turns to the issue of whether the government may properly enforce Section 2709C, the non-disclosure provision, against Doe or any other person who has previously received an NSL. Section 2709C states, no wire or electronic communication service provider or officer, employee or agent thereof shall disclose to any person that the Federal Bureau of Investigation has sought or obtained access to information or records under this section.
A threshold question concerning this issue is whether, as plaintiffs contend, Section 2709C is subject to strict scrutiny as either a prior restraint on speech or a content-based speech restriction, or whether, as the government responds, Section 2709C is subject to the more relaxed judicial review of intermediate scrutiny.
The government's argument is unpersuasive. It fails to recognize that even a viewpoint-neutral restriction can be content-based if the restriction pertains to an entire category of speech.
Section 2709C prohibits any discussion of the first-hand experiences of NSL recipients and of their officers, employees, and agents, and thus closes off that entire topic from public discourse.
Plaintiffs suggest that a more precisely calibrated statute, which would equally advance the government's compelling interests, would prohibit disclosure only on a case-by-case basis, for a limited time, and with prior judicial approval.
Without detailing the degree of narrow tailoring which the First Amendment demands with respect to Section 2709, the Court concludes that Section 2709 is not sufficiently narrow.
The statute permanently prohibits not only the recipients but its officers, employees or agents from disclosing the NSL's existence to any person in every instance in which an NSL is issued and irrespective of the circumstances prevailing at any given point in time. In this respect, Section 2709C, as well as the other NSL statutes, are uniquely extraordinary.
The Court has been able to locate only three statutory provisions that even arguably are analogous to the automatic, categorical, and permanent scope of the NSL statute's non-disclosure rules.
First, communications firms are categorically barred, unless otherwise ordered by a court, from ever disclosing that a pen register or trap and trace device is in effect.
Second, communications firms are categorically barred, subject to a similar exception, as may otherwise be required by legal process, from ever disclosing that a wiretap or electronic surveillance is in place.
Third, recipients of a subpoena under FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, are categorically prohibited from ever disclosing to any person, other than those persons necessary to produce, the records sought that the subpoena was issued.
Furthermore, these provisions are not quite as severe as those contained in the NSL statutes because, with one narrow exception, for certain FISA surveillance orders, they apply in contexts in which a court authorizes the investigative method in the first place.
The FISA limits the potential for abuse in yet another way by requiring a clear connection to a foreign power and by sharply limiting the degree to which any United States citizen may be subject to surveillance under a secret FISA order. Such protections are not present in Section 2709, particularly after the significant broadening of the statute's scope effectuated by the Patriot Act.
The NSL statutes, including Section 2709C, thus stand virtually alone in providing for blanket secrecy entirely outside the context of judicial review.
The government's claim to perpetual secrecy surrounding the FBI's issuance of NSLs, by its theory as advanced here, an authority neither restrained by the FBI's own internal discretion nor reviewable by any form of judicial process, presupposes the category of information and thus a class of speech that for reasons not satisfactorily explained must forever be kept from public view, cloaked by an official seal that will always overshadow the public's right to know.
In general, as our sunshine laws and judicial doctrine attest, democracy abhors undue secrecy in recognition that public knowledge secures freedom. Hence, an unlimited government warrant to conceal, effectively, a form of secrecy per se, has no place in our open society.
Such a claim is especially inimical to democratic values for reasons borne out by painful experience. Under the mantle of secrecy, the self-preservation that ordinarily impels our government to censorship and secrecy may potentially be turned on ourselves as a weapon of self-destruction.
When withholding information from disclosure is no longer justified, when it ceases to foster the proper aims that initially may have supported confidentiality, a categorical and uncritical extension of non-disclosure may become the cover for spurious ends that the government may then deem too inconvenient, inexpedient, merely embarrassing, or even illicit to ever expose on the light of day.
At that point, secrecy's protective shield may serve not as much to secure a safe country as simply to save face.
Section 2709C does not countenance the possibility that the FBI could permit modification of the NSL's no-disclosure order, even in those situations no longer implicating legitimate national security interests and presenting factual or legal issues that any court could reasonably adjudicate.
Bluntly stated, the statute simply does not allow for balancing of competing public interests to be made by an independent tribunal at any point. In this regard, it is conceivable that less restrictive alternatives would be at least as effective in achieving the legitimate purpose that the statute was enacted to serve.
As mentioned above, pending legislation authorizing broad NSL powers in terrorism cases fully outlines some less restrictive alternatives along these lines.
Bills pending in the House and Senate would require the Attorney General to certify, before ordering secrecy, that disclosure would present a danger to the national security, and the non-disclosure order could later be terminated by the Attorney General or a court if the danger expires.
That such protective procedures were indeed incorporated in somewhat analogous statutes and are the subject of corrective bills now pending in Congress confirms that some level of congressional recognition, that Section 2709C, as now written, is severely flawed, and that other means may be available to protect secrecy while still preserving First Amendment rights.
Though mindful of the government's concerns, the court remains skeptical of the contention that a narrow statute could not meet the government's needs just as effectively.
As an initial matter, the court makes clear that where a blanket rule swearing everyone concerned to secrecy forever certainly would be the easier and most efficient course for the government, that is of no moment here. Striking at speech with an all-encompassing effort prophylactic rule will always demand less government effort than a more considered case-by-case approach.
Recognizing that the most efficient course does not necessarily equate to the one which is most equitable and protective of fundamental rights. The issue here, therefore, is whether some uniquely exceptional reason in this case compels the categorical preclusive rule of Section 2709 to be absolutely essential to effectuating the government's legitimate interests in some measure of secrecy.
It is sometimes very difficult to determine whether an isolated disclosure implicates national security.
Particularly institutional limitations come into play when the judiciary is asked to make such determination. Ordinarily, judges do not have national security expertise, nor is the institution of the judiciary well equipped to understand the sensitivity of an isolated piece of information in the context of the entire intelligence apparatus.
To summarize, the court concludes that the compulsory, secret, and unreviewable production of information required by the FBI's application of 18 U.S.C. Section 2709 violates the Fourth Amendment, and that the non-disclosure provisions of 18 U.S.C. Section 2709C violates the First Amendment.
The government is therefore enjoined from issuing NSLs under Section 2709 or from enforcing the non-disclosure provisions in this or any other case, but enforcement of the court's judgment will be stayed pending appeal or, if no appeal is filed, for 90 days.
The ACLU and the New York Civil Liberties Union hailed this ruling issued on September 28, 2004, as a signal blow to the current administration's efforts to expand government surveillance powers in violation of the Constitution.
ACLU attorney Jamil Jaffa said that this ruling is a wholesale refutation of excessive government secrecy and unchecked executive power. As this decision suggests, certain provisions of the Patriot Act should never have been enacted in the first place.
The ruling is the first to strike down any of the vast new surveillance powers authorized in the Patriot Act.
In his 120-page decision, Judge Victor Marrero of the Southern District of New York struck down Section 505 of the law on the ground, as expressed before, that it violates free speech under the First Amendment, as well as the right to be free from unreasonable searches under the Fourth Amendment. The court enjoined the defendants, John Ashcroft, in his official capacity as Attorney General of the United States, Robert Mueller, in his official capacity as Director of the FBI, and Marion Bauman, in his official capacity as Senior Counsel to the FBI, from issuing national security letters under 18 U.S.C. Section 2709, or from enforcing the provisions of 18 U.S.C. Section 2709C.
Since filing the case, the ACLU has labored under a broad gag order, under which the government sought at every turn to censor even the most innocuous, non-sensitive information about the case.
After labouring under a gag provision for months, it is an enormous relief to be able to tell the world just how dangerous and extreme this Patriot Act power is, said ACLU Associate Legal Director Anne Beeson.
As the judge recognised, the Patriot Act imposed a categorical, perpetual and automatic gag on every person who received a national security letter, as well as their lawyers.
The court explicitly rejected the government's increasing move towards secret and coercive investigatory tactics in the post-9/11 environment.
This is an important victory and significant step in the efforts to dismantle the harmful aspects of the Patriot Act, said Arthur Eisenberg, legal director of the New York Civil Liberties Union, which joined the ACLU in bringing the challenge.
The Civil Liberties Association noted that the Patriot Act provision was worded so broadly that it could effectively be used to obtain the names of customers of websites such as Amazon.com or eBay, or a political organization's membership list, or even the names of sources that a journalist has contacted by email.
The decision to strike down a key portion of the Patriot Act comes as Republican leadership in the House is trying to expand the Patriot Act.
According to the ACLU, members of the Congress should take the judges' concerns to heart as they consider the various proposals to expand law enforcement powers.
House Republican leaders, for example, included several Patriot Act-like powers in their intelligence reform bill that is currently being debated. And in the Senate, many expect law enforcement amendments to be offered to its pending bipartisan intelligence bill.
For further information on civil liberties and anti-terror policies, you may visit Equipo Knees Corps' specialized webpage on state of exception.
This information has been provided by the American Civil Liberties Union. It has been produced by Radio Knees Corps with the collaboration of Orville H. Schell, Jr. Center for International Human Rights at Yale Law School, and edited and post-produced at our studios in Madrid on November 8, 2004.